Honouring our D-Day heroes. As we approach the 80th anniversary of the historic Normandy landings on the 6th of June, two of our members who took part in the invasion share their recollections. Peggy, 102, D-Day linguist. As a linguist for the Royal Navy during the war, Peggy translated and intercepted radio messages. Her work was so secret that she never even told her parents. In June 1944, Peggy was stationed at Abbotscliff between Dover and Folkestone. She had recently qualified as a petty officer after undergoing extensive training. She remembers it being so busy in the run-up to the D-Day invasion that she describes it as Hellfire Corner. Most of the messages she intercepted were from the German Navy, some from the Luftwaffe. Occasionally, she'd intercept the odd taxi driver in Yugoslavia. Peggy remembers taking down pages and pages of four-figure code. Although she could translate it, she didn't know what it was about. It was sent off to another team to analyse. When Peggy had a shift in the direction finding, DF Tower, she would spend the night on her own. She took a coat, blanket, books and enough food and drink to last until breakfast the next morning. Her job was to search for the bearings of traffic intercepted by the watch. Peggy kept a diary throughout this time, which she's shared with us. Her work was too confidential to feature in it, but it's a fascinating record of her feelings. She records that the weather was so bad on the 4th of June 1944, she stayed in bed until noon. In fact, it was so terrible that D-Day was delayed. The night before D-Day, Peggy was on watch. She had longed for the invasion to begin. All her hopes for the safety of her future husband, who was a prisoner of war in Germany, were pinned on its success. From Peggy's diary. 1 o'clock came, then 3 o'clock. Sergeant and Woodhouse, both in slacks, obviously prepared to stay the night. Then Lieutenant Gray arrived, plus an NO from New Haven and Lieutenant Woods. It was quite obvious that something was in the wind, but as mere watchkeepers we were told nothing of it, which peeved me considerably, as though we could possibly do any damage, assuming we wanted to, while stuck in the watch room. Finally, we did gather that the invasion was expected, the aircraft at 2 a.m. and first troops at 5:30. When relieved, I did linger, but by 4:30 could find no excuse to remain. I thought of Jeff at the end of my watch, rather like this. They are on their way, my darling. Even now, each minute, they are drawing nearer to you to set you free. Found all my room out of bed, Sue and Hilda rather emotional. Here, however, we saw nothing except a small convoy of landing barges, and at about 5:45 we went to bed. But, of course, we did not sleep well. News of invasion given at 12, issued at 9:30 a.m. Landing in Normandy, La Havre, Cherbourg, Caen. Monty with them got up to see another convoy go by, troops ships this time. It is a fine sight, and I would not be anywhere else at this time. Even if we were further up the coast, we would only see departures, not France. It is terrible to think what is happening so near us. I suppose it is the nearness and the newness that makes it seem worse than Italy. Peggy turned 102 on the 2nd of April. We wish her a very happy birthday. Sid, 101. As Peggy watched the convoy leave, another of our members, former pilot Sid, was in the air over the channel with an incredible view of all the vessels as they headed for France. Sid was with 644 Squadron flying in a Halifax bomber that towed gliders into Normandy. He remembered that when he looked to the right and left, the sea was completely covered. They were all in straight lines. I would say that you could walk from England to France without getting your feet wet. That's how close they were. It was an amazing sight. On D-Day itself, the weather was against the pilots. They were supposed to drop gliders at 1,000 feet, but on the actual day, the cloud base was 2,500 feet, so they had to go below it. Sid says, "We were in touch with the glider. The navigator pilot said, 'Pilot, 10 miles to go.' Our pilot asked the glider pilot what height he wanted to be released at, and the glider was released with about 4 miles to go. The glider pilot landed on landing zone 11. Sid remembers saying, "Glider released." There was also 9 canisters in the bomb bay, which we dropped. When we dropped the tow rope, turned towards the Atlantic and then turned for home, arriving at 5:19, Sid saw no enemy aircraft at all. Sid remembers that they trained very hard up to D-Day and everything was kept very secret. He says, "The enormity of it is, I'm still amazed at it, to be honest. To think the arranging and planning to get all of that, it's out of this world, really."